please. Okay, if there is a attorney or spokesperson, I believe we have Mr. Sergovic here on behalf of those who wish to speak in opposition.
Same rules, John.
For the record, my name is John Sergovic, who Mr. Schrader took some shots at my name early. I'm not the person in opposition to this. I'm representing two clients, Managing Growth Around Lewis, Inc., and the Citizens Coalition, Inc. As an attorney, I'm presenting my client's position, and I'm presenting a position based upon my understanding of Delaware law, my review of the comprehensive plan, and my review of the zoning ordinance. But before my clients speak, I'd like to defer to the city of Lewis because to make their presentation first. Which is the same thing we did at Planning and Zoning.
Yeah, again, that is what we did at the record of the Planning and Zoning Commission. So, Mayor Ford, if you can take the podium.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Jim Ford. I'm the mayor of the city of Lewis. I'd like to thank you for having the opportunity to speak to you and also appreciate your patience in a long evening. I'm speaking on behalf of the city of Lewis as an elected official representing constituents and their concerns, views, and opinions, which by far clearly are objectionable to the proposal. I have copies of the prepared statement that I have here this evening to present. It's about 7 here.
Thank you, Jim.
Some of this is repetitious from the first hearing, and there's additional information, so this would really be a full copy representation of my comments. I'd like to say just a couple things off the cuff before I get into the prepared text, and it's one thing is a reference to the future scan proposal, and that there is no intention whatsoever by the city of Lewis to attempt to replace anyone's comprehensive land use plan with the future scan project, but rather we envision that as a possibility and an opportunity to have discussion with various levels of government, and more importantly, the adjacent property owners to possibly go through a process that's different than what has been explored in the past that would create a better end product for all involved, here again, particularly the property owners, so that the final product is more economically marketable and the mobility, environmental issues, and so forth can be addressed in an overall broader text of vision. So it's just an opportunity to discuss things, and I look forward to that opportunity to talk with Sussex County Council in the near future with that. The plus application for the rezoning this parcel references 68.3 acres. The public hearing tonight is in references to 45.77 acres, and that leaves the 22.53 acres for future development. As we've heard tonight now, the Y has been approached, and there may be an agreement with them for the additional use of the 22 acres of land. Since this is the first time that this has publicly come out, and the hearing this evening advertised the 46 acres only, I'd like to suggest that the record be made available and kept open for an extended period of time for comments regarding this, as at least an attempt to look at a comprehensive plan for the entire 68 acres. I'm not saying anything particularly for or against the Y in that location, but many people do not know that this may be an integral part of the land use, and it may be a part of the decision of the county council.
Just real quick on that, just to clarify, I mean, the why is not part of this application. If the why was to come with an application, they'd be considered, you know, this is for the benefit of Mayor Ford and the folks here and council as well, the why would have to come in with its own land use application. What we're looking at in council and certainly Planning and Zoning Commission is this particular site. And I would ask, frankly, the council to really not consider much about the why, because it really doesn't have anything to do with the change zone on this particular parcel of land.
Well, they did say if this doesn't change, the why doesn't come. So I say, in one sense, it does have, in a way, have something to do with it.
Well, the why, regardless really what happens with this, whether it gets approved or denied, the why still has got to stand on its own merits and come in with its own zoning application for whatever it may seek to do.
I think we understand that, but if they don't do it, if they don't even have a chance to come in, if this doesn't pass, that's what the why was trying to tell us tonight.
No, that's true. I think whatever they said on the record stays on the record. But, you know, that's going to get its own consideration.
I mean, I agree with you. I don't think this has anything to do with making our decisions.
Right.
But it also, but in the other sense, I do see how they're coming from the other side, too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your consideration.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Ford.
The site plan and subdivision of land use as presented, presentation of only the 46 of the 68 acres development this time, is totally detached from zoning approval. So the land use by change of zone would then be regulated by all county ordinances applicable to that zone, the height setbacks, lot coverage, and the permitted uses. And the list of permitted uses adds approximately 30 different potential commercial land uses as being allowable. Without condition or contingency of the proposed development attached to the zoning change, any one of the permitted uses could be applied to the 68 acres under consideration. And the applicant needs to provide, they must provide a need to rezone this land, which I feel they have not. The city has major concerns for water issues in the environmentally sensitive area, and at this time I'd like to introduce Gary Stabley, the current president of the Board of Public Works, to make comments regarding this topic.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and ladies and gentlemen. I'm Gary Stabley, president of the Lewis Board of Public Works, and what I have here for you is a copy of my comments and our concerns regarding this. And would you please pass that out to everybody? And to further inform you that this copy will be on our website, so anybody, the press, anybody can take a look at what I have presented to you. The Board of Public Works exists under the Delaware law of Chapter 10, Volumes 77, so we do have a presence. We have bylaws, which says, is an Exhibit B, which says that I'm the speaker on behalf of the Board of Public Works for civic meetings and media presentations. We have as the Board of Public Works, for 2006 and 2008, been awarded the best tasting water in the state of Delaware. And this was a recognition we're proud of. We serve now over 3,100 customers. And why I'm before you tonight is because of those customers. Because they came, they've been coming to us and say, what is the Board of Public Works going to do about this? We serve, we produce over 137 million gallons of water a year. If you think about your water bill and look at your water bill and take that and multiply that, should our water be disturbed, you can see the cost that will be to our customers. The capacity of the water plant times current service could serve up to 6,000 customers. So we have room to grow. In line with the planning in conjunction with the city comprehensive plan for annexation, the city has submitted theirs and they've done that. Where I, in Exhibit C, we show a map of our service area, which is given to us by the state of Delaware. And you can take a look at that at leisure. It's nice time reading, right, before you go to sleep. It'll help you get a dream. The key one is, you've heard a lot tonight about we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that. We show in Exhibit D the project site and where our wells are located, so you get some idea. Sometimes people don't know exactly where our wells are located. And there is also a copy of a report included with that of investigation number 65, which was conducted by the Delaware Geological Survey, and it's their part of their report. I'm not going to take up a lot of your time. We've heard a lot of comments. We've heard a lot of things of what could happen, and that's really what I want to call your attention to is the second page of the written comments. We have had over the years been hearing in meetings after meetings, this is going to take place, this is going to take place. We have no jurisdiction. They are next to us, across from our well site. They're out of our jurisdiction. The applicant is out of our jurisdiction. There's not much we can do. We can only appeal to the county council, which the mayor and the city council has agreed to allow us to do this. And really, what we're asking is, you've heard a lot of comments and promises tonight. Now, what is the county council going to do to see that these concerns are addressed, including oversight, enforcement, funding, and other actions? We have no control of it. And all we're asking you is, on behalf of our customers, you have enforcement. We do not. So would you kindly think about our customers when we hear these things and statement in there you'll read and everybody else will read, are we going to build roads or protect public water supply for this region? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Since the last application for this type of project, the DRBA has presented plans for improvement of the Freeman Highway Bridge and will begin work this winter. The plans do not include widening of the bridge approaches. Therefore, regardless of whatever potential widening or additional lanes are added to Kings Highway, a bottleneck will occur as you approach Lewis from the south. This will complicate access to the city, negatively impacting transportation services such as EMS response, ambulance approach to the hospital, police and fire services by Lewis, as well as support and backup from other agencies. This will negatively impact the business community as frustrated drivers cannot get to the Lewis downtown area. The proposed Anchor grocery store is yet another threat to the small town quality of life services provided by local businesses, and everyday traffic residents is degraded. Currently, the city is under contract with the Renaissance Group for a study to review carrying capacity of our approaching corridors, as well as potential shuttle jitney service to offset some vehicular travel and parking demands. The jitney service would utilize existing parking areas through partnership agreements, not create additional parking lots and impervious surfaces. Final results of the study are pending. The studies indicate failing capacity at times now. South end of Kings Highway Corridor is expected to operate well over capacity, with all current application built out. 10% of the traffic is expected to use Kings Highway coming into Lewis. This represents an additional 2 to 3 vehicles per minute on the average, causing potential backup at Kings Highway and Savannah Road and 2nd Street, and gridlock when the drawbridge is open. Study indicates traffic generated by the proposed project will create an overcapacity for Kings Highway, Freeman Highway, Gills Neck Road, and Savannah Road in both the summer and off season over the level of service D threshold. While the developer proposes improvements, traffic capacity must increase fourfold to reach the demands. The city has concerns regarding potential demands placed upon the Lewis Police Department for response for service calls to this area as required when the Delaware State Police is not available. This has potential to impact the number of police officers on duty, overtime, and thus a possible financial burden to the taxpayers of the city. In the package, we have a submission of a letter of concern from Dr. Shahari Perry, MD, regarding concerns of ability to respond to the BB Medical Center from the facility at Route 24. For the creation of jobs, while there will be temporary jobs for the construction, we'll do more of job relocation than creation. With the current vacancy that is in the retail area and Nassau Vineyards approved and under construction, economic demand for all this retail and commercial use is not available. Less job relocation or shifting will occur before job creation. So question the applicant's compliance with Sussex County Code 115-194.3 ES1 Environmentally Sensitive Development District Overlay Zone, specifically B-1C, which justifies the application, that question is applicable, B-2, that there's an incomplete submission, and B-2D, that's not addressing the surrounding roadway system's adequate of public facility evaluation report. The city acknowledges that the Lingo towns and families have deep roots in our community, but there is no assurance that once this land is upzoned, it will remain in their hands or be developed as presented. The next owners may not have the same high standards of sensitivity to local concerns. The zoning change is approved. Any permitted use recognized by the county commercial zone could be built there. The county, not Lewis, density, height, and setback requirements would apply. The city is concerned that the upzoning will negatively impact the character of the area. The wellhead protection area will create safety issues on the surrounding roads. The city of Lewis recognizes the need for managed and orderly growth coordinated through various levels of government, property owners, and service providers. Lewis has entered into a memorandum of understanding with Sussex County and has and will continue to attempt to strengthen this agreement through intergovernmental cooperation. Lewis has hired planning consultants, is reviewing carry capacity for our roads, as well as exploring local mass transit options using green energy sources. Development should proceed following all best practices, sustainable methods to produce an utmost quality product that is beneficial to the city, county, and state residents of today and tomorrow, while offering appropriate economic recovery and employment opportunities for now and the future. Lewis's recent history of prudent, appropriate, successful use of land development can be reflected by both Canalfront Park project and the Canary Creek development. Both projects are examples of the city communicating with the developers to maintain a quality of life for generations to come. I truly believe that this can be accomplished again if given the opportunity. The historic special sense of place provided by the community is not only appreciated each day by its residents, is reflected by the outpouring of concern, involvement, and testimony presented. Many, many times in the past, the people of Lewis have stood up for what they believe Lewis to be, stay, or to become. And we are here again tonight to voice concerns for preservation of the first city and the first state, seeking to maintain our quality of life. The zoning change consideration is not in the best interest of Lewis or Sussex County. I respectfully request each of you deny the request presented this evening based on the following reasons. One, the application is for a zoning change with no binding commitment to be present to the presented project, no binding obligation by the current applicant to develop should approval be granted, and only a portion of the 68-acre parcel presented to the state plus review is being considered, leaving an additional 22 acres for potential future development. Two, the application does not reflect consistency with adjacent land use or the character of the surrounding area. Most existing commercial uses are either conditional use or small-scale commercial retail operations. Three, according to the Sussex County Comprehensive Land Use Plan, commercial uses in the ESDDOZ should be limited to neighborhood shopping and businesses, not a regional shopping center. Four, other existing commercial activities in the surrounding area are much smaller in scale, thus applicable to neighborhood or village-scale shopping and not regional, or were built prior to the establishment of the ESDDOZ. Five, this location is not conducive to the needs or the purpose of the CR1 district, which is to provide a wide variety of commercial and service activities, generally serving a large, wide-scale area located on a major arterial roadway. Six, concern regarding traffic, EMS service, impacts of all public facilities cannot be fully addressed by a project of this magnitude at this location. A zoning change of CR1 does not reflect orderly growth. Seven, environmental, cultural, and quality of life issues have been raised, identified, and still remain. Economic development and employment opportunities will be more relocation than creation. Eight, the Board of Public Works of the city has been responsible for public water supply for the city and adjacent customers. At their request, the city has adopted regulations to protect that public water supply by limiting activities in the wellhead protection and excellent groundwater recharge areas. The primary recharge areas for the city and its customers are the land subject to this proposed commercial center and all its impervious surfaces. Expansion of roads and transportation improvements for this project will also negatively impact the recharge areas. Lack of coordination regarding design, oversight, and enforcement among state, county, and city governments do not serve to protect the public water supply. Lack of funding for this purpose does not serve to protect the public water supply. Number nine, the applicant has not sufficiently addressed all requirements in section 115-194.3, ES-1, the ESDDOZ. 10, Sussex County does not appear to have clear provisions for funding to protect, oversee, or enforce regulations or requirements imposed on the developer. Without this ability, the area is not prepared for such intensive development. What is County Council going to do to address these concerns, to provide oversight and provide enforcement, and to provide funding? Please don't choose to build the roads over protecting the water supply for the public in this region. Consider uses for the land of a smaller scale commercial use, production of biodiesel fuels, or consideration of transfer of development rights to an area more conducive to a project of this scale. 12, the need to serve the community, to benefit the community, has not been demonstrated by the applicant. The change of zoning has not been demonstrated as to be the best interest of the community. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address you.
Thank you.
Mr. Servick.
Just so I can identify how we're going to proceed, again, this is John Sergovic, and I'm representing Managing Growth Around Lewis, Inc., and the Citizens Coalition, Inc. I'm going to make a statement. We did deliver a white booklet, and hopefully you all have copies of that. I'm going to call the witnesses that are shown in that index, but we're going to call Mr. Moyer and Gail Van Gilder before we call Mr. Linhart and Mr. Hewitt, because Mike needs a little bit more time on the traffic presentation. Let me start off with the legal problems with this application. And there are significant legal problems with this application. First of all, there's some procedural issues. Back in December 16th of 2008, this applicant withdrew their prior application before the prior council. They did it on the day the council was to decide. There's a code that governs the procedural process before the county council when somebody wants to withdraw a petition. If you don't withdraw it 2 days before the public hearing, then you can only withdraw it for good cause shown. The vote that was taken on the last withdrawal did not, the applicant didn't say what his good cause was. Mm-hmm. The three councilmen who voted in favor of it didn't say why there was good cause. Now, why that's significant is your code requires that if you withdraw improperly, there's a year delay on actually receiving the ordinance. So they should not have been able to even reapply under the Sussex County Code until December 17, 2009. And again, as a legal problem, there's a legal problem created by the prior council, and apparently when this application was received, because the outgoing council said, give it expedited treatment. They didn't say why. They didn't do that by ordinance. But special treatment to this applicant, and it's against the ordinances, would say only in these instances should we receive special and expedited treatment. It's on this council to make sure that the law is complied with. Those are just minor procedural things which may delay this and have to represent it. And my clients have now amassed an opposition to this back in 08, and they've been forced to redo it in 09. And the legal problems that the old application has remain the legal problems for this application.
Well, Mr. Sergovic, I want to respond to a couple things on that. First, just to clear up one issue, the council has the ability to set its own schedule.
I agree with that.
There are certain statutes that give you expedited treatment.
And therefore, there's precedent in the county's ordinance that says we have to establish these expedited treatments by ordinance.
I don't think that's true because we can get into it.
I'm presenting the issue for the record to be complete. I don't expect you and I to agree on that tonight.
Let me make one statement for the record, though. This ordinance was properly introduced. The notice did properly occur. The public hearing has been properly scheduled, and that's why we're here tonight.
So. My question is raised strictly to the procedural rules established in the zoning code, and I'm not saying that you didn't advertise this hearing. I'm saying that the expedited treatment should have been granted by ordinance. If it was to be granted, it was not. It's in violation of the law.
I disagree, but that's okay. Cool.
Keep moving. All right, number two, and this may take a few minutes, but I think it's very important for you to fully comprehend what CZ 1690 does. First of all, and in my materials, I say the project size is unknown. And that's before we got this tentative agreement with the Y. But the impact that they're reporting is 320,000 square feet. Some of their traffic reports, to get under the traffic counts, they report that as office space. There's low traffic counts. But what can be built is, as identified in my letter, they haven't supplied us with what could be built if they decided to go with underground parking, and if they decided to either share parking if they donate land to the Y, or just leave it as AR1 and get a special use exception to build additional parking lots. So what the council doesn't have in front of it is what is the true impact on the county in this location and the cumulative impacts if this rezoning was granted. They're not giving you the entire picture. I don't need to tell you how the land use plan is put together, but I think I need to remind the council of the design. The design is set forth in the preface. You have growth areas, rural areas. The growth areas are preferentially identified. First, and this is just in the preface, for residential use, the preference, the county preference, is town centers, then developing areas, and then environmentally sensitive. There is a subcategory, this is in the preface, that other uses are subcategories. And the subcategories are subtype areas, mixed residential, highway commercial, and planned industrial. So the very preface of the plan says we're going to have residential growth and we're going to have commercial growth. And then you get into the plan itself, and it reestablishes the hierarchies. But the reestablishment is municipals, town centers, developing areas, environmentally sensitive. So there's a preference, and if you look at the plan and you go through the guides, that there's a preferential treatment. And when you look at the preferential treatment of development areas, you'll see that commercial centers such as this are to be, if located in the town centers, they're located in the commercial area as mapped. Now, mapping is very, what's on the land use map is very critical to what is in compliance with the provision of the Quality of Life Act that has the force of law. The statute, and this is the statute delegating the authority to the county, says, and this is 9 Del Code Section 6959A, it says, after a comprehensive plan or element has been adopted by county council in conformity with this subchapter, the land use map or map series forming part of the comprehensive plan as required by this subchapter shall have the force of law. That's what the statute says. And it's not just me that reads the statute the way I just read it. There's a rather critical decision that's mentioned in my materials that really talks about compliance with the county comprehensive plan as mandated by the Quality of Life Act. The case I rely upon is first O'Neill v. Town of Middletown. It's a 2006 decision by Vice Chancellor Noble, which is after the two decisions that Mr. Schrader referred to in his written materials. And it was, at least the first one, was before the Quality of Life Act was even adopted. The second one, and there's some divergence, but if we look at the 2006 decision of Vice Chancellor Noble, he says, that in a quotation mark, after quoting the same section that I just did, that the map or map series has the force of law, he says the following. Interestingly, the Delaware Code provides on that the land use map or series of map have the force of law with respect to the county plans, while a municipal entire comprehensive plan carries the force of law. So the decision controlling, in my view, is that the statute, as interpreted by the Chancery Court, says that if you're not on the future land use map for the use you want, you can't comply with the mandate of the legislation. That decision follows a case called Fields v. Kent County, decided in 2005 by the Delaware Chancery Court. So we have two pieces of precedent that Mr. Robertson or the county attorneys, I'm not asking you to take my word, but I'm saying this is explicit judicial authority with respect to what the applicant has to comply with to obtain your approval. And we're saying, my clients are saying, that they just can't do it because it's not on the map. I also talk about Table 8, which is how they conclude that the comprehensive plan is complied with. If you look at Table 8, all it tries to do is said if the comprehensive plan recommends this land use, what zoning district does it comply with? And there's no text that says see Table 8. There's in the prior plan there was some text, the 03 plan, there was some text that said, here's what Table 8 means. In the current plan, it's just a table. Just like Table 1 says, here's the population count, or Table 9, I think it's 9, that calls for our list of historic sites, and we'll hear more about that with our testimony. But the table doesn't say anything other than if you're going to be, the plan recommends a commercial use, then the zone that you have to be in is either B1, C1, or new commercial. That's what the table set up. It doesn't say, well, it does say that if you're dealing with residential and your density is low density, such as environmentally sensitive, that type of residential use can be applied in these following zones. CR1 does allow low density residential use. So that's what the table provides for. It doesn't say just because you're an environmentally, that a growth area equals environmentally sensitive, since CR1's mentioned in Table 8, that authorizes the use. It doesn't. There's no textual background for their conclusion. The other thing that subpart 4 of my letter outlines, and again, it goes back to the O'Neill case. What O'Neill, by the way, was a rezoning by Middletown that allowed a Walmart. in a comp area that said office use, the town of Middletown, who relied upon the Office of State Planning, they said, yeah, it complies. And what Vice Chancellor Noble again says is it's the county council members that must make that determination. And they have to set forth the reasons based upon substantial evidence. And the deference, at least in that case, because there was no reason given for the alleged compliance by the Office of State Management, that the town did not comply with their, they didn't make the connection between the rezoning and the plan. But the case is important from the point perspective that it says it's your decision, and you must base your decision upon substantial evidence in the record. And I can tell you right now, the Table 8 is not substantial evidence. The last point I want to make is under the zoning code.
At any rate, I prepare this exhibit, and section 115.83.1 is the purpose of the CR1 district. And it says to provide sufficient space and appropriate locations for a wide variety of commercial and miscellaneous service activities. Then 115.83.3, large scale uses, which is over 75,000 square feet. Such uses shall be adjacent to a major arterial road as defined in section 99.5 of the subdivision ordinance, chapter 99. Section 99.5, if you look at it, has roads A through G listed. G, which is US 9, from its intersection with Delaware Route 1 to the southwesterly town limit of the town of Georgetown, or town of Lewis, rather. This is an excerpt from the 1989 revised map. And the southwestern corner of Lewis, which is up here, and I have to be familiar with that, that's the current site of Hemlock and Gardens. It had been recently annexed to the city, and that was the southwesterly corner. And I appreciate Mr. Schrader giving me these maps attached to his letter, because I find them intriguing. And I mentioned this in my book, too. Dartmouth Road is not US 9. You need to get from Dartmouth Road on 1 to get to 9. Dartmouth Road, on his maintenance map of, I don't know what his date is, but it's his first exhibit. If you look at the first red line map, you'll see that Dartmouth Road is labeled County Road 268A. It is not Route 9. The only Route 9 that the code can apply to is U.S. Business Route 9, because there's nothing ambiguous about the southwestern corner of the city of Lewis. The Route 9 that Lingo Townsend may lie on strikes Lewis in about the middle of its easterly border, westerly border. At any rate, it's in the middle of Lewis. It's not at the corner. And my letter also identifies how you construe ordinances, and you can't rely upon maybe what the drafter's recollection was.
You have to rely upon the word of the text of the ordinance. And the text of the ordinance is clear. For a big box over 75,000 square feet, you have to be on one of the designated roads, and the county designated the road as being to the southwesterly town limit. This Route 9 can't be interpreted, the Route 9 they're on, can't be interpreted as going to the southwesterly town limit. With that said, so that you have an outline of the legal positions, and you all have to think very seriously about these issues because they're real. I'll call my first witness. It'll be Mr. Moyer. Bill. Bill, if you can just introduce yourself, because I want to speed through this a little bit.
Okay. My name is Bill Moyer. I reside at 554 Troon Road in Dover, Delaware.
And what's your background, Bill?
I have a BS in biology from Dickinson College. I have an MS in environmental engineering sciences from the University of Florida. I recently retired from DENREC after 31 years of employment as a manager of the wetlands and subaqueous land section. I worked for 2 years with Duffield Associates as a senior environmental scientist. Duffield is a geosciences environmental consulting firm, and I'm now president of my own firm, Moyer Environmental Consulting.
Bill, did I ask you to work with me on compiling who has the ability to make a recommendation on the land use plan based upon the State Office of Planning? Statutory provisions.
I've looked at the codes for livable Delaware and the codes by which the Office of State Planning operates, and my review indicates that there is nothing in that code that would allow the Office of State Planning coordination to make a recommendation.
Okay, and is that set forth in your written text, pages 1 through 3?
Yes.
With respect to, did I also ask you to look at the certain elements of the comp plan and compare those elements to the application submitted by Lingo Townsend or LT Associates?
Yes.
Did you look first at goal and purpose, conserve the county's agricultural economy? That's plan use.
Future land use element?
Yes.
Yes.
And what's your comments with respect to that?
Well, the future land use element of the conservation plan update states that the goal and purpose for the future land use plan is to conserve the county's agricultural economy by promoting farming and preserving agricultural land values.
And with did you see Ortho Roberts' traffic thing? The claim is that this is an orphan farm. Doesn't this farm adjoin an existing 68-plus acre farm that's in an ag preservation?
Yes,
it does. That you have the existing use is approximately 68 acres, and next to it on the other side of Gillswood is another 68 acres.
That's correct.
And the only reason the other portion of the farms are no longer farms is because they've been converted to residential use?
Correct.
Did I also ask you?
I would add then that the this goal that's in the future land use element, the present land use meets that goal, and the proposed land use would deviate from the comprehensive plan update of 2008.
Permitted uses in the environmentally sensitive includes a range of housing types?
Yes.
And if the allowed use in AR1 would be a single family or possibly multifamily to some upzoning?
Yes.
Would they meet the environmentally sensitive goals?
It would not.
No,
If you could read.
The permitted uses in the environmentally sensitive developing areas are described in the comprehensive plan update of 2008 as follows. A range of housing types should be permitted in the environmentally sensitive areas, including singles, townhouses, and multifamily units. Retail and office uses are appropriate, but larger shopping centers and office parks should be confined to selected locations with access to arterial roads. The current zoning for the subject property meets this requirement. The proposed land use will deviate from the comprehensive plan update. The but in the quoted language means larger shopping centers are confined to select locations, not generally within the environmentally sensitive area, and only where shown on the future land use map as, quote, a commercial area.
Hey, did you also look at the conservation element of the CPU?
I did.
And what qualifications do you have to look at that?
I served on the governor's task force on the inland bays during my tenure with DENRIC. I served on the governor's task force on marine recreation. I was on the governor's task force on the environmental legacy. I'm presently on the Citizens Advisory Committee and the Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee of the Center for the Inland Bays.
And do you have a comment on the compliance of the application with the conservation element?
Yes. Runoff from the proposed shopping center will include oil and grease from car leaks, improperly discarded used oil, heavy metals from car exhausts, worn tires and engine parts, brake pads, rust, used antifreeze, and road salts. This runoff will eventually make its way to Pothook Creek in the Inland Bays.
Did I also ask you to look at the water and wastewater element of the 2008 comprehensive plan?
Yes.
And what does it provide?
The water supply protection section states that, quote, one of the best ways to avoid contamination of important water supply wells is to avoid intensive industrial and commercial development that use hazardous substance in adjacent areas.
And do you have a comment on the application as to the goal?
Yes. The current land use meets this objective. The proposed land use will deviate from this objective of the comprehensive plan update of 2008.
And is there a land use which the water supply protection recommends?
Yes.
And what is that?
The water supply protection section states that the ideal type of land use around water supply wells is preserved open space or low density residential development.
Did I also ask you to look at the...
And my comment on that, if I might. The current land use allows for low density residential development. The proposed land use will deviate from the comprehensive plan update of 2008.
Did I also ask you to briefly look at the historic preservation element of the comprehensive development plan?
Yes. Yes.
And what does it provide?
The strategy for this element of the comprehensive plan update is to, quote, integrate historic preservation criteria into the county's development review process. Require information about a site's historic status to be included as part of the application.
What's your comment with respect to the application?
Table 9 in the historic preservation element of the comprehensive plan update lists the Townsend site in Lewis as being on the National Register of Historic Places. The submitted rezoning application fails to address this goal of the comprehensive plan update and therefore is an incomplete application.
Did I also ask you to analyze the applicant's GMB reports under the elements of section 115-194.3 of the Sussex County Code regarding which is the environmental assessment under for the environmentally sensitive districts?
Yes.
And can you just go... the list in your letter, B2A on the code requires the method for reducing the amount of phosphorus and nitrogen?
Correct.
Did the GM, uh, G, GMB report actually address that required information or an apply for rezoning?
It does not, and my comment was as follows. The GMB report does not contain a description of, quote, the methods for reducing the amount of phosphorus and nitrogen in the stormwater runoff and the control of any other pollutants, such as petroleum, hydrocarbon, or metals.
And GMB states they use underground chambers. What's the problem with those?
The GM report states that underground chambers will be utilized for the treatment of stormwater. Although the design and specifications must be approved by the Sussex Conservation District, as they testified, the district does not have sufficient staffing for conducting routine inspections of these systems, which will fail over time if they are not adequately maintained.
And if I understand these systems, particularly as proposed by the applicant, most of the collection of water is in underground basins.
Yes.
And so you can't really see whether there's a deficiency or they're operating.
That's correct. And another weakness of these underground storage chambers is that they do not treat oil and grease effectively. And I'd just like to note that 1 quart of oil that finds its way into one of these chambers has the potential for contaminating 20 million gallons of drinking water.
Does the ordinance require a report on the effect on public and private water systems and groundwater, including an estimate of average and peak demands?
It does.
That is the ordinance requirement. Does the GMP report meet that required information?
It does not. The GMB report does not discuss, quote, the effect on public or private water systems and groundwater, including an estimate of average and peak demands, close quotes. The GM report is inconclusive on the issue of the existing agricultural well on the subject property. The GMB report mentions inconclusively either abandon or use will be reduced. An analysis of the impact is not possible without knowing which option will in fact be pursued.
And does the GMB report also at least mention section D of 194.3b2?
Yes.
And what's your comment on the GMB report on traffic and the required traffic study?
The GMB report incorporates the May 2006 traffic studies. Traffic reports, as such, address only limited portions of the affected roadways. It does not address, as required in Section D, quote, the increase in traffic and the effect on the surrounding roadway system, as required in this section of the Code of Sussex County.
Section E of the ordinance, how does GMB report comply with the requirements of E?
The GMB report does not include a description of the proposed boundaries of the 63.72 acres of the conservation easement, so that it is not possible to comment on the adequacy of the easement in protecting threatened or endangered species. The result of this site inspection should be included as part of the GMB report.
Next section is wetlands. Determination letter, can you determine whether there are actual or not actual wetlands?
Based on my experience with the Corps and the method that they use for delineating wetlands, it's not possible to just walk a site and tell whether or not wetlands are present. The Corps of Engineers uses a three-pronged test. You have to look at the soils, the vegetation, and the hydrology of the area. So it's quite possible that without doing a Corps of Engineers delineation, you could have what are called farmed wetlands or prior converted wetlands on the property. And my check with the Corps of Engineers office in Dover indicated that no such delineation has been submitted to their office.
Under G of the required items, do you have a comment?
Yes.
What is the comment under G?
There was no statement regarding how the amount of proposed open space complies with the comprehensive plan update of 2008.
I relates to recreational benefits and economic assessment. What does the GMP report with respect to this project report with respect to recreational benefits or other benefits?
The GMB report does not readily address recreational benefits or other benefits as required by Section 115.194.3b2i.
And does the economic assessment have a discussion between the allowed uses compared to the maximum property use?
It does not. The report does not provide an economic assessment-based discussion that allows use compared to the maximum property use and therefore does not provide a substantive comparison of the currently allowed use to the proposed use.
On item J of that code section, can you just tell me what the GMB report says and what the related information tells us?
The GMB report states that, quote, there are no historic and or cultural resources located on the Village Center site, close quotes. Even though Table 9 in the historic preservation element of the comprehensive plan update lists the Townsend site in Lewis as being on the National Register of Historic Places.
Did you look at the HITE report, which is the report the GMB report incorporates?
I did.
And what, quoting from that, can you just quote what their consultant suggested with respect to loci, locus 3 and locus 1 of that report?
Yes. In addition, the HITE consulting report that was conducted is included in the rezoning application packet, explains that only a phase one archaeological study was conducted at the Townsend site, which basically consisted of walking plowed fields. In section 6 of the report, conclusions and recommendations, the consultant suggests a structured phase 2 delineation and phase 3 study if the site contains a domestic residence for locus 1. For locus 3, the consultant reports that it is highly likely that undisturbed human remains exist, and again, that a phase 2 and a phase 3 study should be conducted. The consultant states that, quote, any and all future impacts, including agricultural impact, should be conscientiously avoided. Since the requisite studies have not been conducted, the submitted rezoning application does not comply with the section of the Code of Sussex County.
And did you look at K?
I did.
And K is conformity with the comp plan?
Is not. The statement of conformity is incorporated into the GM report by reference. However, the statement makes no reference to the future land use maps under the comprehensive plan update, which must be complied with under the Quality of Life Act.
And finally, under L, did the GMB report state the manner in which mitigation measures are consistent with the comp plan?
It did not. The GM report does not state, quote, the manner in which the mitigation measures are consistent with the comprehensive plan update. Therefore, the environmental assessment requirements are not met. Also, there is insufficient detail provided on the mitigation measures to determine whether or not they are adequate.
As I understand it, and I think the county attorney understands it, every application that's in the environmentally sensitive district must comply with the required information under 115.194.3b2?
Yes.
And has the applicant complied?
It has not.
I have no further questions in this regard.
Does council have any questions? Mm-mm. Thank you very much.
I have a question. You have given us a lot of testimony on a lot of issues. Just so I understand this.
Sure.
Do you have any certification in land use planning?
I do not.
How about hydrology?
I do not.
How about traffic?
I do not.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions from council? You referenced that some of the work done on site, such as observation of the land, was not sufficient to determine, say, wetlands or soil infiltration, and that there was no record in Dover of any work being done.
Right.
Are you aware that the applicant has provided testimony from Atlantic Resource Management, I believe, that they did 17 soil borings on site?
I heard that, but I don't know what the qualifications of that person are.
Okay.
And generally speaking, those types of delineations are not sufficient to meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act to determine whether or not wetlands are there. Until you get a letter from the Corps of Engineers accepting the delineation, those types of surveys are meaningless.
Okay. Any other questions from council?
Did you say if somebody would put in a well near your property, say within 10 feet or so, that they should have the right to control your property?
If it's the law or if it's an ordinance, I would abide by that ordinance or law.
Now, do you think that's right?
I can't comment on that. I have to keep my comments on what the laws are that are on the books.
Any other questions from council? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd next like to call Mr. Lenhart.
It may take me a moment here just to set up. You got anybody else, John, while he's setting up?
Real quick, I'd scale you want to come on up. Gail, if you introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Gail Van Gilder. I've worked on scenic byways since the program started back in, I think it was 2000, in Delaware, and I chaired both the Brandywine Valley Scenic Byway Committee and the Lewis Scenic Byway Committee. And the reason I'm here tonight is to let you know that these roads, the Gills Neck Road and Kings Highway, have been designated by the state of Delaware as state scenic and historic byways. And that was done on June 3rd, 2009. There were 6 roads in Lewis that were designated as scenic byways, and that included Kings Highway, Gills Neck Road, Savannah Road, Pilottown Road, New Road, and Cape Henlopen Drive. And I do have a map on, I couldn't bring the big map because someone else was using it, but I did want to give you, this is the nomination application that I'm going to give you a copy of, and I'd like to, the map here is on page 8. I'm going to give you that, and you can pass it around so that at least you have a map in front of you to look at.
And we can keep that book, right?
Yeah, and then you can keep
Thank
it.
You.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry that I don't have copies of it for everyone, but it's really expensive to print, so I only have one copy to give you, and I gave one to the planning board. But achieving this recognition, which is only one, that we are one of 5 byways that have been designated in the entire state, means that these roads are some of the most scenic and significant in the entire state based upon their vast scenic and historic resources. And the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan does address scenic and historic byways, and they do that on page 1216 and 1217, where it states that the purpose of the program is to identify, preserve, and enhance roadways in Delaware that possess outstanding visual qualities. And the Scenic Byway Program is a program of both the Federal Highway Administration and the State Department of Transportation. Basically, it means that Delaware has decided that they're going to set some roads aside and say, these roads have special, unique characteristics worthy of preservation, and, you know, we're going to try to keep them that way. And we know we have to work on a lot of other roads, but there are some special places that are worthy of that designation. And the Lewis Scenic Byway Committee, just for a little bit of background, was appointed by the mayor of Lewis, and it is a Lewis scenic, it is a Lewis, City of Lewis committee. And a nomination application was written for these roads, and representatives of the many constituencies and stakeholders along the byway worked together with DLDOT and the City of Lewis for 18 months to complete the nomination process. And the application was reviewed and approved by DLDOT, and the primary intrinsic quality that was determined by the committee for Lewis, and you have to determine your primary intrinsic quality to qualify and then justify that you have those resources, which is what that nomination application is about. It was historic, but they also determined that we had strong scenic natural regulation and archaeological features. And the Lewis Scenic and Historic Byway basically aims to showcase the 378-year history of Lewis. And each roadway, together with its adjacent landscape, represents land and sea gateways to Lewis that reflect its history and evolution since 1631. I think it is significant that these scenic and historic aspects of the greater Lewis area attracts visitors here year-round and makes it a premier tourist destination in the state of Delaware. And new development that's built out of scale and context on these byways poses an enormous risk to the tourist economy and the real estate market for vacation and retirement homes on which this area depends heavily. The Lingo Townsend rezoning and proposed approximately 320,000 square foot shopping center can overwhelm the scenic byway and seriously jeopardize Lewis's appeal as a tourist destination. And this is not just about the impact of the shopping center on the short stretch of byway around the shopping center on Gill's Neck and King's Highway, but it is also about its effect on the entire byway system, because traffic is obviously going to leave the area of the shopping center, the new traffic that it will attract, and other traffic is going to cut through other roads throughout Lewis in order to avoid the congestion there, and it will affect the entire system. The ultimate dualization of King's Highway, which DLDOT has proposed and does plan to do and says is necessary if the shopping center goes forward, will drive the future dualization of Route 9 to the ferry. That can drive the dualization of Cape Henlopen Drive to the park, and so on. And the question is that a road we want to go down? More traffic will cut through the entire length of Gill's Neck Road, King's Highway, Pilottown Road, Savannah Road, New Road, trying to avoid congestion. These are narrow, scenic, and historic roads, much of which cannot be expanded due to historic and scenic constraints. And this is the part, this is the charm of Lewis. This is what Lewis is all about and what makes it such a popular tourist destination and such an economic success. I mean, it's a small miracle that it was preserved all these years. And we have something really special and worthy of preservation. And adding sidewalks and shoulders for biking in the area of the shopping center is great, but it's not going to help us along these other roads. And you can't just widen one section of the roadway and not expect that it's going to drive the widening of the rest of these roadways as they go into the historic areas. And the question that you are really being asked to decide today is, will the historic town of Lewis, the very first town in the first state, with its renowned scenic and historic resources, its outstanding beaches, parks, and open space, and its quaint historic village, survive for future generations to enjoy? And the Lewis Scenic and Historic Byway was considered so significant that it passed the test of state byway standards to receive this designation. And DLDOT should take this in consideration when addressing traffic impacts created by the byway on this proposed development project. And any improvements should be made on the guideline that they not destroy the character of the existing road. And this can often be done through context-sensitive design. But if this is done, it becomes obvious that these roads cannot support the density of development proposed by the shopping center. Lewis is at the tipping point, and I hope that you will take this into consideration when making your recommendations. And in closing, I would like to just address the information that was presented in the early rebuttal before I got to make my presentation, where the question about the fact that the Secretary of Transportation, Carol Ann Wicks, both signed off on the scenic byway application as well as signing off on the road improvements. And yes, that can probably happen given the way the process works. And I think we need to remember what the PLUS process is. I mean, PLUS means preliminary land use service. It is a preliminary assessment of what the developer might expect that they would have to do as they go through the process. But and it's mainly between the developer and the various agencies at the state level. And there's not a lot of public input at that point in time. And, I mean, the traffic improvements that are proposed that would affect the scenic byway are basically what DLDOT feels is needed in the event that this the build-out of the size that's proposed is approved by you. But it's not DLDOT's job to decide whether or not it's the right proposal. That's up to you to decide whether or not this is the right type of development for a scenic byway. So what they're telling us is that in the event it is approved, this is what will need to be done. But at some point in time, we're going to have public public process, I'm sure, on these road improvements to determine whether or not that is, you know, the appropriate expansion that is needed. And when we get into the issues about scenic byways, there are a lot of context-sensitive design standards that can be used to make these roads smaller and more compatible with scenic byway attributes and character, so that the overriding question that we really are asking you to decide is this a proposed shopping center in keeping with the character of Lewis and the scenic and scenic historic and byway designation? Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions from council?
Guess not. Could DLDOT have very easily said, we're not going to sign an MOU, we don't want the road expanded? Could they have said, this is a scenic byway, we don't want to expand the road, we're not going to sign an MOU?
Well, I'm never.
Could they? I mean, that's a
they could.
Answer.
They
know. She probably didn't know the answer.
They could, but I haven't had the opportunity to really have that conversation with them. So, I mean, I have not gone in and talked to them, and you know, about the fact that it's a scenic byway and what can we do and how can we, you know, make this compatible. And those discussions still need to take place. So, and I will tell you that up on Route 52 in the Wilmington area through Greenville, I mean, there was a similar issue there when DLDOT was trying to expand the road. And after a lot of discussion, a lot of community opposition, they did change their mind and they downsized the road and put in a lot of context-sensitive design, and everybody loves it now. So it can be done.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Mike Linhart. Mike, if you could just identify who you are, your area of expertise, and then go into your analysis.
Certainly. For the record, my name is Michael Lenhart. I am a registered professional engineer with the state of Delaware, state of Maryland. I'm a licensed professional traffic operations engineer with the Institute for Transportation Engineers and a member of ITE as well. I was involved in this project on the original application that you heard before you in 2008. And now I have on record submitted two pieces of information that should be in your material. One's a September 9th memorandum that discusses the comp plan and the applicability of this site as proposed at this location as it relates to the comp plan. And some traffic information in there that talks a little bit about the proposal and DLDOT's review. And that's in there for you to read. I'm going to go over some of the highlights of that as well. Also have a September 29th letter that we've submitted tonight for the record, and I'd like to just highlight some of the points in that. And that goes back to the Sussex County Code that Mr. Cervic discussed tonight, and section 115-194-3B2D, which says that at a minimum, an applicant shall provide an analysis of the increase in traffic and the effect on the surrounding roadway system. There's several points I'd like to emphasize with that. One is the increase in traffic. And this, we have an approved comp plan here that shows this site as zoned AR. That allows two residential units per acre. And that is the base case for what is in the approved comp plan. That should be the base for the traffic study that's conducted along Kings Highway. The applicant study and the DLDOT review did not look at the existing zoning. They simply looked at what is proposed here, and they did a traffic study on the full build-out, the potential build-out of the commercial zoning. It really needs to look at what's in the approved comp plan versus the proposed. And that's one key point. A second key point here are the study, the intersections that were included in this study. The applicant's own traffic study shows as much as 35% of the site traffic generated by this commercial property. And these are new trips that are generated going through the intersection of Route 1 at Savannah Road, the Five Points intersection. 35%, that equates to roughly 500 trips in a Saturday midday peak hour through the intersection of Five Points, and it was not studied. I would submit to you that that is an important intersection that should be looked at in terms of this rezoning's impact. Route 1 at Dartmouth Drive was not identified as a study intersection, yet it was included by DLDOT. That has 45% of the site's in, new traffic. And going south on Route 1 from Dartmouth, 35% of the site traffic, which again, 500 trips south, through Postal Lane, Melson Road, the signals to the south, and those were not evaluated. With the congestion that's experienced today along Route 1, both north and south of the site, I believe that they should have been included to determine the impact.
Mike, just to confirm, would they be considered part of...
Mr. Cervic, if you could, just so you can get up to the microphone. Yeah. So we get it on the record.
Would those intersections, would they be... part of the surrounding roadway system addressed in the code section?
They would be, yes.
And without those intersections, you're not addressing all the surrounding roadway systems?
Yes. I mean, essentially, this is a peninsula. There's limited access in and out of the site. You've got the Five Points intersection, and you've got Dartmouth, which neither were considered study intersections in the scope of this study. Dartmouth was evaluated, but Five Points was not. Furthermore, the intersection of Savannah Road at East 3rd Street and Kings Highway down in the town of Lewis was not included in the study. There's 10% of the new site trips, which is roughly 143 trips in a peak hour through that intersection, and one of my slides is going to show why that's a key factor. That's a very awkward intersection. And 143 trips per hour relates to a fairly significant increase in that area. I'd like to start, have a PowerPoint presentation with a few slides here. This slide is the morning peak hour traffic. And morning peak hour, evening peak hour, Saturday peak hour, and Sunday peak hour. And I've got a little pointer if I can just grab it.
And Mike, you used a 387 square foot shopping center.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had a pointer. It's not there.
Is that a reasonable within the range of this amount of acreage?
Yes, this is a 387,000 square foot retail center, which was what was in the original PLUS application. The applicant has shown before you tonight the trips associated with roughly 320,000 square feet. I believe that's under developing an under projection of what can be done on this land, and once it's rezoned, 387, if you have a floor area ratio of a 0.2, which is a fairly reasonable assumption, you could be at 387,000 square feet just on this 45 acres, not considering the 22 acres with the YMCA and other potential development that could occur there. Now, I was misquoted tonight as saying that there would be a 1,500% increase in traffic if this is approved. That's not entirely accurate. If you take the Saturday peak hour trips, for example, the third column, the 90 number represents the number of peak hour trips that would be generated by residential if this were developed per the comp plan. The 1,429 represents the new retail trips that would be generated by a 387,000 square foot shopping center. That is roughly a 1,500% increase in the traffic that would be generated by that land use, comparing one land use to the next. Not traffic on King's Highway is going to go up 1,500%. It's the land and the intensity of the traffic that would be generated on that land. It's a significant difference of what would come out of that piece of property. This is the three columns, the weekday traffic volume, daily traffic volumes over a 24-hour period, the Saturday and the Sunday, in those three columns. The Saturday traffic volumes, 24-hour volumes from a residential development would be 958 daily trips, where for a retail shopping center, 387,000 square feet, 15,600 trips per day. At the Planning Commission hearing on September 9th, I believe it was, the applicant's traffic engineer stated that this was not a valid piece of information, that you really look at peak hours and you study the peak hours, your morning peak hour, your evening peak hour, your Saturday midday peak hour. And that is true. That's how levels of service are calculated for those periods of time. However, this is critical to understand the impact and the intensity of traffic that's generated over not just those peak periods that you would get in the morning and evening for residential, but what you get all day long for a retail commercial shopping center. These numbers are taken from ITE, Institute for Transportation Engineers. This is for shopping center. It is the hourly traffic that you would experience from 10 a.m. in the morning until 9 p.m. in the evening. Each of those dots represents the next hour from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday is shown with the square blocks on it, and what that tells you is that around 2 o'clock in the afternoon is when the peak Saturday trip generation is for a retail center. But why this is important is that peak, while it peaks at 2, it's very high beginning at about 11 to 12 a.m. in the morning and continuing on until 6 o'clock at night, roughly. So you've got a 6 or 7 hour period throughout Saturday where this is generating significant volume of traffic. This is an example of the trade area. It's taken from the comprehensive plan, the future land use plan, and it's been discussed whether this is a large community center or whether it's a small regional center. I think it could probably be defined as either one of those. It could also be defined as a power center, depending on what the ultimate mix of users are that go in on this site. A community center might draw from a 3 to a 6 mile area. And if I can just, this first ring is a 3 mile ring, the second is a 6 mile, and this is a 10 mile ring. So a community center would draw from 3 to 6 miles, a regional would draw from 10 to 15, and a power center could draw from 5 to 15 miles.
What's a power center?
Power center is, International Council of Shopping Centers, they define it as an average of about 390,000 square feet and 2 to 3 major tenants. Okay. And the bulk of the site is comprised of those tenants. And then there might be some small retail mixed in, but the power, it's basically those big anchor tenants that are there.
So where's this traffic coming from?
Well, the trade area is defined as, if you assume maybe a 6-mile trade area, if this is between a community and a regional shopping center, and I would point out this is twice the size of an average community shopping center as defined by the International Council of Shopping Centers.
Are we pulling them off the ferry as they come by? Or
you're going to have some pass by.
Or are we going to try to bring them off and we want to bring them in? How are we going to do this?
Well, I will tell you what the applicant's traffic study had for an assumption on the trip assignment. There's normal pass-by traffic that you have. People get off the ferry, they go driving by, or people go on the way to Cape Penelope or back, or might be somebody coming home from work that lives in the area. They drive by the center and they stop in to pick up.
But that's not considered additional traffic.
That's not new. That's pass-by. That's already on the road network. New traffic, though, that's the new traffic is the 15,600 trips per day, or the roughly 1,500 peak hour trips. Those are new. Those don't even include the pass-by traffic.
So where'd you say they were coming from, those 1,500?
The applicant's traffic impact study has 10% coming from down Gills Neck Road, the new subdivisions of Gills Neck Road, which I personally think it's a little high. I think that maybe some traffic is trying to be hidden down that rather than taking it out to the critical intersections. 10% down Freeman Highway. New trips, I don't know what new trips are going to be generated down Freeman Highway. There is some residential down there, but, you know, you've got the ferry and you've got Cape Henlopen, and those are going to be passed by that are already there. So, again, I think there might be some trips hidden down there rather than sending them to the important critical intersections. 10% going down into Kings Highway, down into the town. I think that might be a little bit low. And they've got 35% of their new traffic coming from the south on Route 1, 35, and then they've got 45% that either goes north on Route 1 or west on State Route 9. It's beyond the study area, so there's no real determination on where it's coming from or going. Again, I think the trip assignment was approved by DLDOT, so, you know, it's up to your own judgment. Where do you think the traffic's going to come from? I think it's going to be more of a regional nature from Route 1 or Route 9, myself. But the point of this,
maybe my wife will be going down.
There you go. You can ask her how it was. And the point of this is just to show the trade areas and the potential region that this could draw from. There was some discussion about this tonight as being misleading. This is the original site plan for the 521,000 square foot shopping center. This is a side by side. On the left, you have the original site plan, and on the right, you have the new site plan. This is simply an effort to show that the new and the old really aren't that unsimilar. The new just doesn't have the 22 acres on the south, and it was reiterated this evening by the applicant that the 22-acre parcel is planned to have the YMCA. However, 22 acres, if you break that down into even if you use a 0.25 floor to air ratio, I mean 25% of the site is building footprint, you'd have a 240,000 square foot YMCA, which is twice the size of a Home Depot, to put it into context. I doubt that 22 acres is going to develop using the whole Y, and that leaves some balance, and there could be potential for other uses there. So the point of this is just to show that if you're looking at a rezoning of the 45 acres, once the first tree falls, it could set up a pattern for more activity, and I think that it is important to be conservative in looking at this. So. Existing land use, State Route 1, you can see there, and this is from the comp plan, has most of the commercial zoning is right along State Route 1. There is really nothing along State Route 9 or Kings Highway through that area. The applicant tonight presented that this project is in a level area 3 and also in a level area 2. Mm-hmm. And I would opine that this is probably, guessing, 80% in a level 3 area.
I think it was presented as level 2.
It was presented as level 2, and then they said, oh, yeah, it's a little bit of it's level 3 as well. It's reverse. It's most of this site is level 3, the very small percentage of it being level 2. This is important because state apologies for spending defines level 3 as being you shouldn't approve developments that require road improvements to be dependent upon the development. And we're getting in that catch-22 here of the level 3, and I also state that level 3 projects should not be approved before level 1 and level 2 projects. It just puts the priority of this Kings Highway CIP project in question and very far down on the list here, I believe. Future land use plan. Again, State Route 1, you can see that the areas along State Route 1 are basically infilled with commercial zoning. There's been no commercial zoning added to State Route 9. This is a aerial photo. Savannah Road runs from the bottom of the screen, runs north to the top right. Kings Highway comes in from the very bottom. 3rd Street runs kind of east-west here. And the purpose of this is to show Kings Highway, they're projecting 10% of their site traffic, 143 trips per hour into this intersection. It's a very strange intersection. And right now there's only room for one car to queue up. If you're coming out of East 3rd Street and you're sitting to turn on to Savannah or cross Savannah, there's only room for one car to queue. As soon as the second car queues, you block off Kings Highway.
Got hit there once.
And so this is a bit of a strange design. I think there could be operational and safety issues here. Again, this intersection was not studied, and I believe that should have been. I'm going to try to then, I jotted down some ideas, and I am going to try not to be repetitive on these. Some of it was in response to things that were discussed this evening, and so I may end up being a little bit repetitive, but my apologies. And in the testimony this evening by the applicant, one of the presenters indicated that I claimed that DelDOT didn't know what they were talking about. And that is not true. I'd like to say that I have the utmost respect for DelDOT. I think they did a good job on this project. They reviewed the material. They presented it. There was a lot of information. And what I've done, what I've tried to do, is present that in a way that the layman can look at it and try to interpret it. And I have not misrepresented any of this information. I've reviewed the DelDOT agreement that the applicant spoke of this evening. It appears to be in line with the January 8th DelDOT review memo, but it does not offer support or objection of the land use application, other than saying that if the applicant agrees to do all these things, they will offer an issue, or they will offer a letter of no objection, but they are not saying that they support this. And there's been indication tonight, them, you know, waving around, we've got an agreement with DelDOT, and by no means do I view that as an approval of this project or DelDOT's support of this project.
trying to sum up.
Yes.
Even, can you sum up with the DLDOT improvements at the intersections they studied based upon the information they had, do we still have basically failure after failure before build out, failure after build out?
Yes. Yes.
And what intersections fail?
The intersections of US 1 at Dartmouth, I'm sorry, King's Highway at Dartmouth, and US 1 at Dartmouth and King's Highway at Clay fail. And also, I believe the intersection of King's Highway, Gill's Neck, that one needs to have some additional through lanes that are not funded in order for that not to fail as well. All of the intersections will fail without the dualization, will operate worse than a level of service D.
And does DLDOT's traffic study include the proposed dualization of a portion of King's Highway?
Their traffic study, they conducted a King's Highway corridor study, which used the model that you saw this evening, and I'm going to present something as well. That they used, and they said that the best, the most feasible solution was to implement a second through lane in both directions on King's Highway. Then they went on to say, however, they didn't feel that that was a reasonable developer project. Therefore, and I'm paraphrasing their words, they said that if the county chooses to approve this application, then they recommend a smaller subset of improvements and to recommend this project, King's Highway upgrade, for dualization in a future CIP program. That is not funded, that's not been recommended yet to my knowledge, and again, goes back to being in a level three area, which calls into question the likelihood of actually getting the funding for that dualization. But with or without the dualization, DLDOT in their report and even North Rogers on record at previous hearings have indicated that these intersections will operate worse than a level of service D.
And if you could just, your running of that IT program was indicated as somewhat incorrect. Can you just address that issue?
Yes, yes. And I'd also like to touch on just one other point before I do that. And this goes back to the Sussex County Code, the section I quoted earlier about evaluating the increase in traffic from an application. It was evaluated what would happen here with this rezoning. It was not evaluated if you retain the existing agricultural residential use, develop that, what road improvements would be needed on King's Highway to be able to make this corridor acceptable. And I have done some initial analysis on that. That was presented in my September 9th report. And with turn lanes and signalization improvements at the key intersections of King's Highway, they would all operate at level of service D or better, with fairly minimal improvements compared to the dualization project. Dualization would not be required. CIP project would not be required. And so I just think it's important to reiterate that if you look at the existing zoning versus the proposed, that increase in intensity is, I believe, what causes the need for the dualization project. And that hasn't really been evaluated properly, I believe, in the past. Now, this is the same model that was shown earlier this evening, and what I've done is I corrected in my model the right turn volume coming out of the opposite side of Dartmouth to go south on Route 1. That was 777 vehicles, as noted. I've changed it to the 277, as discussed, and I would like to show you what I get. This is also running at real time. I'm going to speed this up just so I'm going to put it at 4 times normal speed. So that is what you would, that's 4 times faster than what would normally occur out there. Now, as indicated by Mr. Rogers in his testimony, there is a bunching up of traffic that occurs here, and he said they weren't sure why, and it is because this intersection is failing. Well, first of all, let me say, with the change of the traffic volume, that right turn volume from 777 to 277, the intersection goes from a level of service F to a level of service F. It still fails. The difference is that with the 777, I'd had a higher degree of failure. Now it's still operating with over 2 minutes of delay per vehicle at that intersection. If you get 80 seconds of delay, that is considered a level of service F at a signalized intersection. So anything over 80 seconds per vehicle, level of service F. This is over 160 seconds at the intersection of State Route 1 and Dartmouth. Now, the reason that his model was showing bunching, I believe, and I didn't get to look at his model, but in looking at mine, the southbound left turn from State Route 1 onto Dartmouth is failing. It's over capacity, it's failing, and it backs up, and when it backs up, it goes out and it blocks through lanes on Route 1. And the way the model treats that is it tends to create a little bit of bunching. It appeared to me, and I may be mistaken, I don't want this to appear improper insinuation, but it appeared to me that they simply, in their model, had a node somewhere in here in the software model, and they just wiped out all the volumes beyond that node, because if you looked at what I'd noticed in the model, it appeared that all the cars seemed to be appearing and disappearing at this point and coming through the intersection. And therefore, it wasn't being fed properly coming south on Route 1. And if I misread that, I apologize, and I would stand to clarify.
Are you saying there's going to be more traffic on Route 1 because of this development?
I think that's what my testimony was to, yes.
Good, Sam.
And so I've left that in.
It's 11 o'clock, and Sam finally figured that out.
You can't just take those out of the model. So I've left those in. Now, just to kind of scroll up, and that's the only thing I've changed is that volume. And I scroll up, and here's the entrance to the center. Here's Clay Road. Clay Road is backed up. If you watch this a little further, it backs up all the way beyond this intersection.
But that's with the improvements, right? Double Clay
This is
Road.
With the improvements.
Double Clay Road.
This is with all of the improvements that DelDOT it has in their agreement.
Okay.
I don't disagree with DelDOT that the dualization is not a reasonable improvement for a developer. My position is this development is causing the need for the dualization, and therefore, you can't say it's not reasonable. It's their fault, but it's not reasonable. And this, if you watch this, and this is a Saturday midday peak hour beginning at, we'll say 12. I mean, this is just when it's coded to begin, 12. But it has the peak hour volumes from the DelDOT study, and I have it running for 2 hours. Mr. Rogers was correct that you typically look at a one-hour period, and that's your study period. But when you have failing conditions, traffic doesn't stop at the end of that hour. It continues to flow. It continues to build. Your congestion, your queuing continue to build, and this is 50 minutes into it, and here's the intersection of Freeman and Kings. And if I scroll and if I fast forward it a little bit further in, so you can see here now we're an hour into it, and if I go a little further, we're If I get an hour and a half into it, it's off the map back up in Kings Highway into town, and beyond Monroe Street, it's almost back to the bridge. This is DLDOT's model with the corrected volume that was discussed this evening. I'm not here trying to throw darts at DLDOT. I think they did a good job in this evaluation. They've tried to point out what